This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And after 10 days of World Cup qualifiers, during which the EFL have rightly celebrated the role their competitions have played in the embryonic careers of every single one of the latest England squad, it's back to the day job as a full programme of domestic football returns. And we'll start the ball rolling with an audience with the Sky Bet Championship's biggest name and someone who knows from first-hand experience exactly what it takes to be promoted from the division. And we'll do it on the official EFL podcast. No doubt in the biggest EFL transfer of the summer 2021 window, after 11 years, 140 goals in 419 appearances and twice captaining them to championship promotion, Troy Deeney's time with Watford is over. But don't feel too sorry for him, because this weekend, 26 years after his dad took him to his first match at St Andrews, he's set to make his debut for his beloved Birmingham City. I feel like, Troy, I should be playing Adele's Hometown Glory or something under all of this. Are you getting similar vibes yourself?
It sounded really good, mate. I'm not going to lie. I couldn't have done that any better myself, so well done.
Thank you very much. Troy Deeney, good luck. It's been lovely to talk to you. No, I joke. How strong are the bonds, mate? I mean, this is the family's club, isn't it, that we're talking about?
Yeah, it is. In my whole family, I've got quite a big family, but there's only ever been two Villa fans. So one was my granddad, who's now passed away. He was a Graham Taylor fan more than a Villa fan. And my brother, who played for Villa from the age of 6 to 20. So he kind of was a fan by default. And every single one of us, even the ones in Ireland and in Jamaica, are all Birmingham City fans. So, yeah, there's a lot of us. And the intensity's been definitely turned up, but I love it. As you know, mate, I like a bit of pressure, so this has been good fun.
Do you remember that first game that I alluded to? Do you remember going, how you felt as a seven-year-old through the streets? Everybody, I'm assuming, smoking a fag around that time, about on street corners and all the rest.
No, we used to get the 97 bus from Chelmsley Wood, which was about 25p, 30p then. It's probably about £4 now. But it used to go straight away through, get off in town, go to a pub where my dad was, where kids were allowed to walk around pubs, and just make our way into town, into the ground, and kind of like three or four little stop-offs where dad would meet his mates, and then kind of all walked into the ground together, and it was great, mate. I can't tell you who we were playing, but the atmosphere, and I remember we won the game, and I remember when we left, just the joyous, like, occasion it was when everyone kind of fell out of the turnstiles. It was, people didn't want to go home. They were going to the pubs. They were going to different parties. And it was like, that was what I first got introduced to football, as if you win, look how happy everybody is. And that was kind of, you know, my introduction into Birmingham City.
Wow. And presumably, since this move has come about, I mean, your phone must be red hot, is it? I bet you've had hundreds of texts, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely been a few. WhatsApps took me until, I think, 4 or 5 days later to get to the bottom of them. Then I'd iMessage and Instagram was going through the roof. But do you know what, mate? I started 12 years in at Watford, and I've loved it, and I love the people there, and they obviously have admiration for me. But the love I've had since I've been here has been unmatched. I literally went into the club shop yesterday to pick up some kits for the kids, and the staff members coming from the back to take pictures and like, oh, we love you, glad you've come home. The town's got a buzz, and like, just really nice when you hear people, like strangers really telling me that I've picked the city up, which is obviously really important to me.
Yeah, it's a big responsibility though, mate, as well, isn't it? That obviously people realise that one man alone can't do it, but you could be that kind of catalyst that really takes the club onto the next level of this revival that has clearly happened over the last 6-8 months under Lee Bowyer.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is a lot of responsibility, but I do also think it's a joyous moment, because all the pressure now is just to be better than it was before. I've added more pressure on that by saying, let's try and get out of this league first time of asking. I think the gaffer's done unbelievably well since he came in the back end of last year. I think Craig Gardner's done unbelievably well since he's come in. The signings we've made have really transformed this team from what it was a year ago to what it is now. And all behind the scenes, everyone's working really hard to get this club back to where it needs to be. And I just hope that I am, I don't know, one cog to that. I think I'm never going to emulate what I did at Watford. I just don't have the time to do 12 years of, you know, grafting away and helping change things behind the scenes. But I do think that in the short time I'm here, while I've got a lot of energy to give, I'm going to give everything for this club. And I hope that in the short amount of time, then people can see that, you know, I made a real impact and a real change.
Did you used to do any sort of sneaky visits back to St Andrews through your playing career? You know, put a false beard and a pair of glasses on and a woolly hat and sneak into the stand and watch them?
Oh, yeah, I've come to a lot of games. I never had to do that. I've come to probably about 20, 30 games in the last 2-3 years. Well, obviously not with COVID, pre-COVID, I mean, sorry. You know, watched a lot of games. I've been at some big moments, last day staying up and everyone's having a real good time. But I don't want us to be, you know, looking at relegation. That's what I've said since the moment we've come in. We're close to the playoffs now. Let's get in there and stay there. And that's the aim for the rest of the year, to get into the playoffs and stay there. And then if we can continue a good run, we might nick the top two, but let's really get into the playoffs first and start looking forward. Don't worry about what's happening behind. Let's keep winning games, keep knocking it out. And I want to bring the joyous ties back. We've got our third stand being open, which is massive for us, because as you know, St Andrews, when it's rocking, mate, is a real good place to be. A really intimidating place to be as well if you're going to come and play against us. So we can get the crowds back. Me and the lads here making sure that the performance levels are right, and you can get them right behind you. We can be a force this year.
Can we do the logistics, Troy? Who called who? How long it's been on the radar? You know, do you think last season at Watford you obviously did play a reduced amount of of games? Did you know this was likely to happen this summer?
Well, no. The reduced games for Watford came from the injury. So I tore my Achilles and my calf, which obviously that was January. That put me out for more or less the season. I managed to make it back right at the end. That was more of a mental thing for myself, to be honest. We did that up until last Tuesday, where the Carabao Cup. I actually thought I still had a career at Watford. We was proving fitness and trying to show that we could still offer things with the understanding that we may get an extension for a year or two. And then I was going to probably retire at the end of that if I'd got 2 years, and then move into, you know, like a coaching role or something at Watford. That was the discussions. And then when I wasn't playing in that Carabao Cup game, I've not been this fit, mate, in probably 5 years, 6 years. So I didn't want to waste my time sitting on the bench. I didn't want to waste Watford's time by being the highest earner and sat on the bench and just taking away opportunities for other people. So we had a discussion on Tuesday, Wednesday, and that was done by Friday, and I spoke to Blues Friday afternoon and I signed Monday. It was that quick.
Wow.
So did the medical over the weekend on the Saturday and the Sunday and signed on Monday when everything had been agreed. And you know, we shook hands amicably with Watford, and that's why the way we did it in terms of the social media release of my message to people was all timed to give people enough space to give the credit he deserved, I think, the 12 years deserved.
Yeah. I mean, listen, leaving Watford is clearly not something you did lightly. I'm trying to imagine how you felt driving away from the training ground that last time with your two carrier bags worth of stuff from the back of your locker and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a sad moment, mate. It was sad because I hadn't anticipated it. So it wasn't a case of being able to build up for something. I don't know, you know, if you lose a family member, you know the funeral's 3 weeks' time, so you build up to that moment, I suppose, in your head of how you're going to feel. But this kind of come really quick, so saying goodbye to everybody was quite sad. Made a lot of friendships there, not just on the playing staff, but with, you know, people in the background and know their kids and their grandkids and things of that nature. So it was one of those ones where it was really sad to leave, but I don't think that's the end of me and Watford in all capacities. I think, I don't know whether it be media or whether it be going back there as a coach or whatever it might be later down the line, I believe that there's still something there for us to work together on. But if it is to end now, it's been a hell of a ride, and I think you've been there every step of the way, I think, mate. I've met you a lot of times on those journeys.
Yeah. Well, I think we last saw each other about a year ago, the start of last season, but you were carrying a knock or something going into mm-hmm. last season, weren't you, if my memory serves me right? And then came into the team. Yeah?
Yeah, that's basically been my career for the last 5 years, carrying something and just trying to manage it and not really being able to train to the level that I want to. So when I did the Achilles and the calf, it was literally a reset button. I was 32 years old and it was, what do you want to do, Troy? Do you want two more years feeling pain, not performing to the level you want to perform at, or really dive into it? And it took a test of character, mate, where you know, financially I'm okay. So I didn't have to really push myself to the level that I wanted to, but there's something inside me that was like, I'm not going out like this, and managed to drop a lot of weight, got no injuries as we speak, and I'm touching wood as we say that. And it seems like I was destined to do good things here at Birmingham. So let me not put too much more pressure on myself, but I'm really, really excited for Friday. So I want to see what I can do, but also know that I'm probably two games away from being fully match sharp, because I've only played, 30 minutes this season. I've done all the pre-season games, but 30 minutes of proper intensity. So I'm hoping that once the game goes and the crowd are up, I can get through the games to the best of my ability.
Do you know what, Troy? I'm going through my head is wondering what Troy Deeney, who arrived at Vicarage Road 12 years ago, would make of Troy Deeney leaving. You should be proud, because you've been on one hell of a journey, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, it's been an interesting roller coaster, hasn't it? There's been a lot of loops. There's been a lot of loops in there. But I would never have imagined having the career I had at Watford at the start. Very naive, very young, very immature. So to go on to the way I have and score the goals, and you spoke about it in the introduction, but the promotions, I think it's the longest Watford have stayed in the Premier League as well, in the 5 years that I managed to captain that team. So yeah, it's a lot of real good, proud moments. Little bit gutted I didn't get to finish the way I would like to, you know, playing, or, you know, end of last season, where we could have done something, say bye to the fans that way. But all in all, I do believe everything is, you know, it happens for a reason. And yeah, very happy with how it went, Clem. Like, look back in 3 or 4 years' time and probably appreciate it a lot more. But right now, that's done. I wish Watford well. Hope they stay up and do what they want to do and achieve. But my sole focus is on Birmingham now.
You've set it up wonderfully to return, mate. Whenever you've got a free Saturday and they need somebody to draw the tombola and get the raffle tickets out, mate, you're nailed on for it. They'll take you every time. Have you had a quiet moment in St Andrews? I ask this sometimes of, I remember when Chris Wilder went to Sheffield United to manage them, where you go back to where you used to be with your old man on the terraces and had a little look at that space, or just had a quiet moment to yourself to think, wow, finally, I'm here, and think about that kid who first went to a match.
I haven't had that experience yet. I probably won't, if I be totally honest. Obviously, with my dad being dead, it's a bit sensitive to me. So I don't do things that will make me emotionally charged. So, but I've gone back there, and we did the promo video, and it was just strange, mate. I've never been in there when it's empty. You know, there's no cameras, there's no nothing. So it was nice. But I want it rocking. I want to hear my name being rung out properly. I want to hear, there's a thing that we do at Birmingham, which, as you know, that when a substitution changes, the fans give it the who, and it's really loud, it's really prominent. So I want to hear that. I want to hear that again, and that'll make me feel like I'm home then. So based on the social media response and the amount of people asking for tickets, I'm sure Friday will be, you know, a really monumental occasion. But that's all good unless we win. It doesn't matter.
You are right about that, who. Do you know what? Because obviously I went as an away fan. I'm a Middlesbrough fan, and I've been a few times, but you don't notice it as much as when you go in a work capacity. And the first time I really clocked on that, it's like I was terrified, mate. I was jumping out of me. I was jumping out of me, seeing things. Mate, yeah. All we can do is wish you luck. I love the story. I love the journey you've been on, but time for a new chapter, eh? Welcome home.
Thank you very much, mate. Appreciate it as always.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Plenty more to reflect on then across the EFL's three divisions. Let's do it in the company of a man who led Burnley into the top flight for the first time in 33 years in 2009. Owen Coyle went on to manage Bolton Wanderers, Wigan Athletic and Blackburn Rovers, as well as manage in the MLS and currently the Indian Premier League. And actually, we got to start by talking about Troy Deeney. I mean, it's a dream come true for him to go back to the club he supported as a boy, but what a potentially talismanic figurehead for his football club, Owen.
I've got to say, I think it suits all parties. I think it's a fantastic move for Troy. But for the football club to entice somebody, you know, Birmingham have had difficult times in the last few years, but to entice somebody of Troy's capabilities, quality as a player, but what he is a leader. I mean, he's fearless. He drives other people on. He's one of those players I always feel, Clem, that he doesn't have to score to contribute to the games because of what he brings the team. And as you say, to take him back and sign for his boyhood heroes. So what I do know from obviously my meeting him and competing against him, he's not going back there to rest in his laurels. He's going back there to drive Birmingham on and try to get everywhere everybody wants to be into that Premier League. So I think it's an exciting signing for sure.
Where are you with Homebirds? I mean, there was nothing like blooding a youngster who'd been born locally to a club to get the crowd going. That's one end of the spectrum. But the other end, obviously, is to bring back somebody who has deep love for the football club. I mean, is it a no-brainer or does it carry an element of risk when you involve some sort of sentiment in the mix?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, any signing is a gamble because you ultimately you don't know how the player settles into the club, different things. But, and obviously, I understand the sentiment of seeing Troy coming back. But the most important thing, it's not about, you know, sentiment, he's been a supporter of it. It's that he's still capable of doing the job because he has to deliver on the field. What Troy does is not only on the field, but off the field as well. Because obviously, you say it's a club he's passionate about. And you mentioned young players. I don't think they could have a better leader to show them what it means to get to the top level. And the other thing I always feel when you're signing experienced players, Clem, when you sit with them, and you know this, the people you've interviewed, the footballers you, all through your own career, when you sit and chat with them, you know if that passion, that hunger, that desire that they had from day one, that they still retain and they still have, and they must have that. Because if they don't, Clem, that's why you get very good players that have played at the top level, and they might be relatively young, but they kind of start to drift down the leagues. It's not because they're bad players. More often than not, they've probably lost that just little half a percent of hunger, desire, whatever you want to call, that keeps you at the top level. And I know Troy's still got that. And as I say, I think it's a great signing. I think it's been very well thought out. And I think he's got a huge role to play at Birmingham.
Yeah. The other aspect to this is a little bit of nasty beggaritis. And I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up, because I was at QPR this week with Mark Warburton. I said, what's the main difference between QPR at this point last season and QPR now? 2021, only Manchester City in domestic football have had a better points tally. He said, he actually said this to me and I repeated it to the player involved. He said, last season we just weren't nice enough, so we signed Charlie Austin. And I said this to Charlie Austin as well when I saw him afterwards. He said, absolutely right. You do need somebody as well who can get down and dirty and is prepared to really roll their sleeves up and get stuck in to maybe somebody that's a bit weak and feeble at times. It can be worth a few points as well, can't it, Owen?
Well, I mean, you can never have enough, in regards to Charlie Austin, you can never have enough winners, and certainly you can never have enough goal scorers at your football club. But in Charlie Austin, not only have you got an outstanding goal scorer, you've got somebody that's been there, he knows how to do it, he knows how to win, whatever it takes, he's hardworking. And as you say, you know, with all due respect, Clem, the game we play in, you know, if you're going to be nice guys all the time, you're going to get rolled over. You've got to be prepared to fight your corner, and as I say, have that real hunger to go and win football matches.
Yeah, and I got to watch QPR training, and you can see as well, talking about hunger and whether Troy still got it, you know, I was focusing on watching Charlie for a wee while, and just the passion, even in training, of when someone gets flagged offside and a goal is cancelled and he's rolling about with histrionics on the floor, not in a horrible, undermining to the squad way, but again, just goes to show how these guys at a very high level operate.
Well, that's the competitive edge that they have. And if you lose what I alluded to earlier, if you lose that competitive edge, then it's kind of a downward spiral. So, but there's no doubt that, you know, Charlie Austin, players of that ilk, I mean, these are top players, top lads, and they've worked obviously at a very high level, and they want to do it again. And that's the bit I like in older players, Clem, that they're not happy to settle for what they've already had. They still want to push on and be the best they can be every single day. And I think you mentioned, you know, in Troy and Charlie Austin and boys like that, they retain that, and that's why they play for so long.
Yeah. Now, listen, Championship clubs obviously coming off the back of the international break. You know, at this point in the season, a month in, you're managing a Championship club. You have, is it beneficial to give the boys a few days off? Because I think probably a few players that haven't been playing have nipped off for a quick last bit of sunshine, all the rest of it. Or are the worries from a manager's point of view about slowing down early season momentum? How do you sort of balance that up?
Again, it's a very good question, because there's a balance to be had, Clem. Because if you have, as most Championship teams do, a number of players away in international duty, and then sometimes you're left with, you know, a skeleton squad, whatever you want to call it. So I think if you can get the balance, that certainly there's a few days rest in there, but equally, when they come back, you know, there's a real purpose to the training and look to get that edge again. The challenge always with international breaks is, as a manager, everybody hates losing on an international break because it's such a long time to the next game, Clint. Whereas when you get that win, it's a lot easier to justify a couple of days off for the players. So I think, you know, you always go into that game looking to get those 3 points. And everybody, when they do go on the international break, going on a you know, that feel good factor, which is so important.
Yeah. What's going through your head at this point of a season, say 5 games in? If you've had a good start or if you've had a bad start, what kind of things are floating around you? Are you daring to believe if you've got good points tally, but are you aware of the fact that you need to get a win ASAP if you haven't?
Listen, I've got to say, I'm laughing because the questions are absolutely brilliant, because it is football, and this is the thing, people think you play 4 games, oh, they've had a terrible start, and oh, they've had a great start. When all said and done, we know, particularly if you Championship and the leagues like that with the 46 games, I mean, this is a marathon, it does take time. But I'm laughing because I think back to the year we got promoted at Burnley. And if you remember, Clem, you probably do know in your memory and everything else, but we sold Big Kyle Lafferty to Rangers for $4 million. We got allowed to use half of that money to bring some good players in, Chris Eagle, some young boys like that. And we're building, I thought, a really exciting football team. But like anything, we did very well in the pre-season. But of course, when you come into the league, anything can happen because you're just bedding things in. Our first game of the season, we went to Sheffield Wednesday, and we were 2-0 down within 4 minutes. Got back in the game with Martin Patterson, 2-1, but we ended up losing 4-1. Went to Bury in the Cup, we won. Then we had a home game against Ipswich Town. First home game of the season. And the club had decided that they were going to bring, the boy was going to bring the match ball in on the hand glider, arrive in the centre circle, leave the ball in the centre circle, and we'd start the game. Brilliant idea, fantastic. The boy comes in the hand glider and he breaks his leg on the stand when the teams used to come out, which you know of. But it wasn't that he broke his leg. He was stuck in the stand, which was a health and safety risk. The game was delayed. The game was delayed for 2 hours, Clem. The 3 p.m. kickoff became a 5 p.m. kickoff. We went out and we lost the game 3-0 to 3 own goals. So that's us now. We played 2 games, 0 points, 3-0 at home. The boy broke his leg, stuck in the roof at Turf Moor. So our next home game is against Plymouth. Chris Eagles gets sent off after 20 minutes. Paul Sturrock's the manager. And we drew the game 0-0. And I remember after the game, when Paul came in, we're sitting having a drink, cup of tea, whatever. And Luggy, as he was known, Paul turned to me and he says, "I tell you what, Owen, it's going to be a long season for both our teams." Right? I was blazing because I'm thinking to myself, I'm building a really good team here, right? And so I says, "I think we're going to be a lot better than that, Paul." I says, "But yeah, let's see." Anyway, following week, as Guzman judge, we go to Crystal Palace. And we'd finished the season before. Crystal Palace were in the playoffs. They beat us 5-0 on the last day of the season. And the atmosphere was incredible. Neil Warnock was bouncing, and that was them in the playoffs. So I had this in my mind. That was our last game of last season. We went there anyway. So we're playing Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace are down to 9 men. They've had 2 men sent off. We've had 2 goals disallowed. It's still 0-0. And it got to the 94th minute. Crystal Palace got a free kick on the edge of our box, 20 yards out. And Sandy Stewart, my assistant manager, he was just about to, he was buying a new house in Preston, and he was just about to conclude it. And it's funny how there sometimes are humorous moments in football. Anyway, they lined the free kick up, 94th minute, 0-0 against nine men. We've got 1 point from three games, this would be 1 point from four if this goes in. And I turned to Sandy and I said, Sandy, you know that house you're going to buy in Preston? He said, yeah, yeah. I said, see, if this goes in, you'll no need to bother. So thankfully, it was by the post. We drew the game 0-0, but with 2 points from four games, Clem, and we went to Forest next game and won at Nottingham Forest, Graham Alexander, 1-2-1, and that was a catalyst for us going on a very good run. My point is, if people have had a slow start, don't be getting too caught up with it. It can change very quickly. And the momentum, as you know, Saturday, Tuesday, those games, those points can elevate you right up the table.
Listen, nothing's happened in the Championship since last week's episode of the Official EFL podcast. Yep. But I would love to get a little overview from you on the Sky Bet Championship. Who's impressed you? Who's disappointed you? Any standout players? It's an open-ended question. Take it wherever you want, Owen.
No, well, I think it goes back to what we were chatting about earlier about starts. I actually went to the Preston game the other week before Preston had won, and at home to Peterborough, who'd been, had a couple of decent performances, decent results. And obviously, you're only a few games into the season, but people are desperate to go those elusive 3 points and get up and running. And I remember speaking to Peter before the game, Peter Ridsdale, and said, listen, I've watched Preston last year, good side, good team, just need that little break, that bounce of the ball. And Preston were very, very good and full value for the win against Peterborough, and they've kicked off since then. So that's the thing, all of a sudden, that one win becomes two wins, becomes three wins, the confidence flows through. And don't be getting too despondent if you haven't won too many games down at the bottom, and equally, at the top, don't be getting too carried away. I think, big Tony Mowbray at Blackburn has signed some good young players and existing ones from last year, although he's lost Armstrong. So I think that they've, for what's happened, I think they've started well. So I think there's going to be, again, the Championship, Clem, I think there's going to be equally, because teams will get good runs at different times. I think most of those teams will feel at one point or not that they can reach those playoffs. And that's what makes the Championship such an exciting league. It really does.
Yeah. Although, on the other hand, I think you'd be a brave person that would bet against Fulham and West Brom not being there at the end of the season.
Yeah. I think for me, West Brom have been the standout in terms of scoring goals, looking exciting and obviously looking to bounce back. I agree with you as well, obviously, Fulham. I still think this. I liked them last year and I think they'll be fine. I think Bournemouth will be there again. So, I don't doubt there's going to be, I would suggest probably three or four that's looking for those automatic, but equally everybody will feel they've got a chance of being there or thereabouts.
Skybet League One, Sunderland top the table at the moment, followed by Accrington. And I want to talk to you about both of those two clubs for very different reasons, because obviously one is an absolute giant and one, I would argue, is the greatest getting a gallon out of a pint pot operation in the whole of English football. Where do you want to start? Do you want to go higher level, or do you want to start with John Coleman and Accrington?
Well, I mean, there's only one place between them in the league, so it's not, Accrington have started brilliant. Actually, when I came back, I actually went to the game last year, Sunderland-Accrington. Sunderland won towards the end of last season and looked a good side. And I actually thought at that point, they were looking good for promotion at that point, Clem. Kind of tailed off a little bit again. So I think this year, and you would certainly feel that Sunderland are capable of getting up the league and, start to move back to where we all feel they are. I mean, it's you've got to earn it, obviously, but it certainly is a Premier League club in waiting. But the only way you do that is by winning on the field. So I've got no doubts that they, will go from strength to strength to get a good manager, somebody that knows his way about, the leagues, in particular, obviously, the Championship. But you've got to get in the Championship first. And I think they'll have the tools to do that this year. I think Sunderland will be, I certainly think they'll be the real deal this year. Accrington, John, just keeps defying logic, because in terms of their budget to everybody else. But what he does, he's very clever with his recruitment, with the players that he brings in, not only in terms of their ability, but the right type of player to fit into his group dynamics, because they obviously have a certain way of working. So I think they've been very, very clever at that. It's a lovely, lovely little club, Accrington. And, particularly in the vicinity, it's not too far from where I live as well. So you want them to be doing well and be supporting them at every opportunity. And they've had tough times, through the years. I actually remember playing a game at Burnley for them. I think it raised about £30,000. So it's nice that, you know, the local clubs are doing well. And, you know, and John's done, he's been, at the times he's been there, because he's been there at different times, as you know. But it's been a lovely, lovely story, Accrington, particularly with the history and the tradition, when you think how old the club is and everything that goes with it. So it's nice to see them doing really well.
Yeah. Rather begs the question on how many more players there are out there who maybe don't quite get the chance, because John and Jimmy Bell's recruitment and where they go and find these players that have maybe left Liverpool, Man United's academies and ended up in little obscure outposts, and then they see the potential, bring them in, polish up the rough diamonds, often move them on. Rather begs the question just how many other players there are out there who just maybe have fallen off the ladder and don't get another chance.
But do you know what, Clem? This is actually a show you could have on its own about what you said there. Because when you have young players, for example, at the elite clubs, and I always say, and I've always said this, you know, people talk about, oh, you make big decisions, you leave your star player out. Yeah, of course, those are big decisions. But the biggest decisions I always felt, and the ones that certainly were challenging, was when you decided at 16 who was going to have your professional contract, who wasn't. Because there's obviously only so many you can take on. But the ones that don't, it's not because of bad players, but sometimes that rejection, you know, rejection can have a real strong impact on those kids. Some of them get disillusioned, fall out of love with the game. So my point is that those type of ones, there's loads of those players as well. So if we can find a way to be keeping them in the game, whether it's scholarships, abroad, whatever it is, because there's no doubt there's talent there. And John and, you know, Jimmy Bell, you've said that, they've found those type of players. So I think sometimes it's not everybody that has the character to take one step back, to take two forward. But if we can find a way to keep as many in the game as possible, but there's certainly, you know, terrific young talent out there. And there's no shame, really, if you've been particularly an elite club, to have not been given that contract. And that's where I think other clubs could step in if they certainly see the ability and give them a new lease of life. And, you know, the amount of success stories we've had and we've seen that. I mean, I think back, and somebody you know very, very well, but Andrew Robertson, who was at Glasgow Celtic as a kid, you know, and then obviously was released, went to Queen's Park, who was an amateur club at the time, and found his way, started moving up the ladder. And I think that's probably the shining example for any young player, I would suggest, that when you've had that rejection, you know, look, there's your perfect example of that you can get yourself back up again. Obviously, it takes hard work, it takes ability, it takes an awful lot of different qualities, but you should never, ever, you know, not keep trying to get there.
Filed under Not Got Going Yet, and you've kind of covered this. I know it's early doors, but obviously Ipswich Town are in the bottom four at the moment, but have made, well, I don't know how many signings it is now. It was 16, 18, 20, whatever it is now. When you make that amount of change, does a manager factor in the fact that you are not going to hit the ground running and there will be a gradual ramp up over the first 3 months of the season before you hit your absolute click switch?
I think as a manager you know that, yes, but obviously you're hoping that everything does fall into place as quickly as possible. I think to be able to do that, what you need, Clem, is you need to have the understanding and the backing of the owners. And I think Cookie's got that. I think he's signed some very, very good players. I've got no doubts that Ipswich will turn that corner very soon and start to go on that winning run. I mean, this is a huge club, as we know. So I would expect, we mentioned Sunderland earlier on, I would expect Ipswich to be up there at the end of the season as well. And obviously, the sooner they start to win, the better for everybody. But there's no doubt with the quality of players they've signed, with the money they've spent, because, you know, the new owners have invested heavily in that squad. And I'm sure Cookie will get them up and running. Listen, he's an outstanding manager. He's proven at those levels. And I think he'll show that again.
Into Sky Bet League 2, and not a million miles from where you live, but on the you know, the other side of the country there, Harrogate Town. Isn't it great that for every giant that is currently struggling, there is a success story like Harrogate Town that just keep on stretching the envelope, bring new methods into the game? And I love the father-son combination there, you know, of dad off the pitch and obviously Simon Weaver on it, just seem to go from strength to strength, still unbeaten.
Well, they have, and it's a great setup, as we know. It's well structured, it's organised. They work within their budgets, their limits, but they work to a certain way that everybody's comfortable in what they're doing. Obviously, coming into the league as they did, they've solidified, and now obviously the good start to keep pushing it on. The challenge is always, is once you're up there, to make sure that you remain up there. But they're such grounded people with a well-run club, didn't have every chance of doing that. And the other one as well, who's not too far from Mel, who I fully expected to be up there, and I think will be Bradford under Derek, who did an outstanding job at Morecambe. I mean, Bradford, as we know, are a huge club. When they're going well, the fan base, it turns out. And I've got no doubts, I fully expect Bradford to get automatic promotion this year.
Serious subject to finish with. Newport County, Mike Flynn missed 3 games, COVID-related. He has brought up the subject of the fact that some of his players have not been jabbed. And he's trying to be liberal and say, look, this is a personal choice. But the problem, of course, is that every time one of his non-jab players comes into contact with somebody that tests positive, he's then got to quarantine them for 10 days. So I guess my moral dilemma question is, should players be obligated to do what they can to play as many games as possible? It's a really tough line for a manager not to be dictatorial, but at the end of the day, you want your prime assets ready to play football matches.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think in an ideal world, we want everybody to have the double vaccination, only because I think it makes it a lot smoother for people. But equally, we've got to understand that, you know, some people aren't comfortable with, you know, vaccinations or whatever reason it is, and they've got to be allowed their own individual beliefs. Again, but you're right, it causes, if you're wanting the league played and everything else, I mean, we, obviously last year, as you know, I'm working in India, we're due to head out again. Last year, the whole league was in a bubble, which was very testing at times, even for the mental health and everything else. But it got the league played. There was no incidents. There was no positive cases and everything else. And again, this year, I think it's going to be a bubble again in Goa. So, I think in an ideal world, but, you know, we don't run dictatorships, as you know, claim in this country. So I think there's always going to be a challenge there. And the issue, as you say, is if somebody flags up that they are positive, it's the impact that it has on others. It's not the one individual player. It's who you've come into close contact with. And it's kind of a domino effect. And, you know, I don't really know how you get the answer to that, if I'm honest.
Yeah, other than, I suppose, as you say, to let people make their own choices. You did mention you're heading back to India. I have some lovely conversations with Phil Brown, who was also over there. He's loved the whole cultural experience. Have you too, broadening your horizons, seeing different parts of the world culturally, seeing how people from thousands of miles away operate?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's to have your career in football, and Brownie will tell you this, we're very lucky, we're very fortunate, we're very blessed. And of course, you want to, as you say, experience new things, new cultures and everything else. But the game still remains the same game, Clem. You know, it's the same as what you say, under 15s, under 16s kids. It's still the same game, just different levels, quality, but also higher you go to, obviously, the English Premier League, which for me, as I've always said, is the best league in the world. But yeah, it's great to meet new people and so different ideas, different cultures. And yeah, Brownie was in the staff, Big Aidan Davison, the boys that were there, you know, they're different class, great lads. And even on that, talking about as we do, then I'm pretty sure that Brownie will be looking to get Southend back in the league, and, you know, expect to see them up there at the end. So yeah, looking forward to it. And we always judge countries on people and everything else, but, you know, it's been an enjoyable experience for sure.
A bit like talking to you. Thanks for joining us, mate. I'm glad we caught you before you went out. Don't forget Factor 50. Make sure you get it all over that face and things.
Well, you would need a bit more, Clem. I'm gonna get a wee bit of hair left, so I'm all right in that respect, mate.
Touché, Owen Coyle. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Pleasure as always. Take care.
That's it for this episode. The big thank you to Owen Coyle and Troy Deeney. If you've enjoyed it, and I sincerely hope you have, I thought those two were fab, do please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials if you'd like to get in touch. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.